And we are live here on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. What is up, everybody? Nick from the P2W Fantasy Podcast here. 2 days in a row. Very, very excited about my guest today. Just to introduce him before he goes in and lets you guys all know where to find him and what he does. But you've previously been with Roto Experts and Fox Sports, but most recently, you are the Fantasy Sports Research Associate at ESPN. You can catch this man on the Fantasy Focus Football with names like Field Yates, Matthew Berry, Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dopp. I know you're involved with some baseball podcasts as well. Your friends on the Fantasy Focus Live refer to you as Thirsty Kyle. I'll formally introduce you as Kyle Soppy. Kyle, thank you for joining the show today, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Nick. Always a pleasure to join. It's never a bad time to talk football.
Absolutely. I know you do a ton of it every single day, so I really do appreciate you coming on the show and doing it even more so outside of the ESPN world. But Kyle, can you let everybody know where to find you, maybe on social media, and then can you just let us know a little bit about what you do, because I know this is a very, very busy time of the year for you, man.
Sure. I'm Kyle Soppy, ESPN on Twitter. That's S-O-P-P-E for my last name. And yeah, I mean, I'm like you said, you teed it up pretty well. I'm the fantasy researcher behind the scenes for pretty much everything that goes on here. Football, baseball, pushing for more and more basketball, but that's a work in progress. But as far as putting together notes, data, my job's basically to make the pretty people sound good, you know, so that's what I'm here for.
And I listened to the show a ton over at ESPN, and you were on top of it. It doesn't matter what is asked. If they do have to have some sort of quick stat pulled up, you're right there with it, and always super prepared. So big piece of the show. And I thought to myself, I'm like, hey, some of these other guys are in front of the camera all the time. I got to get Kyle in front of the mic here. Not that you're not already, but again, thank you for joining us. So before we get started today, as always, this show is partnered up with the Fantasy Points Media Group, fantasypoints.com. You can go check out the website, one-stop shop there. Use the promo code 21WIN10. All right, so we have an interesting show today. We'll get into the topics, but it's factor cap, and I'll get into what exactly that means. And we have some real nice topics to hit on today. Stick with us here. To win, no fear to give. I feel what I can't forgive. I go all in. It's time, yeah, I won't regret. I'll pick the best on trip. They don't understand. I play to win. Yeah, I play to win. I play to win. Yeah, yeah, I play to win. I play to win. Oh, play to win. I play to win. Yeah, yeah, I play to win. I play to win. All right, all right. So again, Kyle Soppy with us here today. The basis of this show, Kyle, I'm naming it Factor Cap, and I just turned 30 this year, so I'm still trying to like hang on to my youth. Sure. Just a little bit. Not that the 30 mark's a big thing or anything, but I'm trying to stay hip with it a little bit. So for those that don't know what cap refers to, it's typically something that's false or a lie. So when I'm asking Kyle if a statement here is more fact or more cap, he's basically just letting me know, is it more true or is it more false on the wide spectrum of things? So, you know, with week 10, we just finished that slate, and a lot of people overreact at times or react properly to things that happen in week 10 or things that are going on. And it's important to kind of address some of these things looking forward. So, Kyle, the first thing I got on the slate here deals with the Baltimore Ravens. So Rashad Bateman, week 6 and 7, had 6 targets. He then went on to have 8 targets in weeks 9 and 10. He outscored Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown, 14 to 9.7. this last week. So Kyle, fact or cap, Rashad Bateman is shifting into the wide receiver 1 for the Baltimore Ravens.
You're killing me here. I'm going to sound so old because I'm older than you. I'm going to say cap, and that just sounds like it sounds dirty coming out of my mouth. Just
it is a little uncomfortable, but it's for the youth out there, man.
It is. We're really taking one for the team here, but I'm going to go cap. And it's nothing against Bateman. I got a lot of shares of Bateman coming into the year, believe in the talent, and believe realistically in the trajectory of that offense. I mean, they've opened it up for Lamar, and you love to see that. But his production isn't coming at the expense of Hollywood. So I think Hollywood's going to stay number one. I mean, since week 5, there's been 4 guys averaging at least 10 targets a game. You've got Adams, Cup, Hill, and Hollywood. Like, that's a hell of a list to put your name on. And he's averaging 4% more points per target this year than last. So the spike in volume hasn't resulted in a reduced efficiency there. So I think Hollywood's there, but coming into the season, I would have said there was no chance this offense could sustain three pass catchers, but I think they can now.
It's interesting because Lamar's throwing the ball a lot. And, you know, Rashad Bateman, there's some good signs. I read off the increase in targets lately. What we do want to see is more snap percentage. He had 55 last game. He's floated around the low 60s in some other games. And last game, Sammy Watkins was out there a little bit too much in the beginning, but we saw Bateman get more involved at the end of the game. But looking at the target share of the last four games with Bateman being healthy, it's 44-28 in Hollywood Brown's favor. I'm with you. I think that Bateman can shift into being a guy that can be a good flex play if sure. He continues on this path. But, you know, 1 week of scoring a little bit better than Hollywood Brown, I think we shouldn't overreact to that. But I'm with you with these two guys being sustainable with Lamar Jackson there. As far as Bateman, are you still a little bit hesitant when it comes to maybe seeing him as a weekly starter now, or is it more play it by ear? What do you think with that?
I mean, it's all contextual, but I think in the right league, a 12-team league where you're starting three receivers, I think he's in that top 30 mix. I just put Hollywood closer to top 20. And like we said, I mean, Lamar's thrown it all over the place. He's been efficient, and his running just opens up so much. I think Hollywood's going to get more of the big plays, which makes him the more attractive piece moving forward. But that's not to say Bateman can't have his weeks. And I think if you're looking at 4 to 6 catches for 65, 70 yards on a weekly basis, like, that's double-digit points. I'll take that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's hit that 80-yard mark twice now out of the four games. I thought Baltimore did a great job bringing in Bateman, who complements Marquise Brown. They're not you know, very similar wide receivers. They can have both good games here. So sticking with the wide receiver position, Stephon Diggs, huge game last week. Yep. 8 catches on 13 targets for 160 receiving yards and a touchdown, 30.2 fantasy points. You know, last year he was at this point the wide receiver 1 weeks 1 through 10. So there was that expectation. Obviously, he didn't finish as the 1 at the end of the year, but right now he's the wide receiver 12. So I think he's done well, but the expectation maybe hasn't been to where it was at the beginning of the year. Factor cap, the Jets game was the turning point for Stephon Diggs to be a top 3 fantasy wide receiver rest of season.
I'll go cap here. I think he's better than wide receiver 12, which is, like you said, where he's been. But to me, he's not in that top tier of 3. And I'm going to nitpick because you said top 3. So Cup, Tyreek, and Adam, like, who are you putting him over?
You can at this point for me. You can't.
He's tier 2 for me. Like, if you want to put him in with the Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, DK Metcalf, like, I'll listen to that. But with Beasley there, Sanders, and Josh Allen himself accounts for so many scores, I'm not sure there's enough equity to put him in that top 3 with guys. I mean, Davante Adams is basically a goal line back for Green Bay.
Yes.
The way they use him. And I mean, Kupp is too. Like, those guys, it's weird when they don't score. And that's not going to be the case for Diggs, I don't think, even in a best case scenario. So if you told me he was top 10, or even if you wanted to push me and say top 5, like, I'd listen. But top 3 is a little optimistic for me.
And he hasn't been bad at all. It seems, and I know you're not saying that, and I'm not saying it either, but you want him to be to that Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams level, to where he's popping off on a weekly basis. And looking at the slate of games here, he's played in 9 games. He's only had 2 games over 100 receiving yards. At this point last year, he had, I think, double that. And he had games of 20-plus fantasy points, I think, 4 times at this point last year, and only twice now. So I think this offense is good when he's going, but now they're starting to use both running backs a little bit more. We see Gabriel Davis. He's not a guy you even need to pick up, but he'll randomly have a touchdown or have a big gain. We saw Matt Breida this week out of nowhere. God. 6 touches for 2 touchdowns. I think you guys probably had that projected over on the Fantasy Focus, right?
Maybe for the season.
maybe. That might be pushing it in itself right there. But yeah, I'm with you. I think he can be very good. I'm hoping we see more 100-yard games and more 20-plus fantasy games out of Stephon Diggs. Number 6 in targets, number 7 in yards. But this might not be the flame that ignites him to be the wide receiver 1 for the rest of the season.
they just don't rely on him the way the Packers do Adams or the Rams do Cup. Like, the Bills can drop 30 on you and Diggs can have a poor game. I don't see the Packers doing that without Adams going bonkers, or the Rams doing that more often than not, especially with Woods out now, without Cup going bananas. Like, it's a tough spot to be. It's obviously a good offense, and you're obviously starting him, and I have no problem firing him up in DFS in any given week, but he's just not tier one for me.
Quick side question, just because we're talking about like that tier one of wide receivers. And sure. I will admit that, you know, I do the same, you know, I come out with preseason rankings and do a lot of preseason podcasts and things like that. And one of the biggest whiffs for me, I didn't say he was going to be a bust or anything, but I didn't have him anywhere near the top of this list here. But Cooper Kupp, just been phenomenal this year. Unbelievable that he's sustained this sort of production for fantasy, as far as just going out there on a weekly basis and scoring a lot of fantasy points. Last 4 weeks, 3 out of 4, he's had 13 targets on the dot. Were you high on Cooper Kupp before the season? I'm saying I whiffed on it.
Clearly not high enough. I mean, you would have thought I learned my lesson. I was down on Diggs 2 years ago, coming over with the new quarterback, all that stuff, and he just dominated. And then you'd like, oh, like, okay, it was Josh Allen growth. Like, okay, we kind of know what Matt Stafford is. Like, is Kupp going to be that much better? Was Goff that bad? And the answer is yes. Like, I think I had Kupp top, like borderline top 15, which is obviously sounds asinine now because that's like his worst weekly finish. Like, the dude's just producing. Matthew Stafford's a stud. Like, not that we needed this year to prove that, but getting him out of Detroit, it's clear they've had a connection since day one. Like, this whole breakfast narrative and all that stuff, maybe it's real, maybe it's not. Regardless of what's caused it, this production is real and spectacular, and I'm not moving off it.
No. And a lot of people early on the season, just looking at the Twitter space, were saying like, oh, this might be the time to sell. And if you did at the time for fantasy, you made S-O-L. A major S-O-L. Yes. absolutely. So again, staying on the wide receiver train, but we've talked about some positives. Now we got to go in the opposite direction. I really, really like this guy a lot personally. I have his jersey. He switched his number, so that doesn't really help me that much. But weeks 1 through 4, DJ Moore was on fire, averaging 22.4 fantasy points. And during that span, he was the wide receiver 4 overall. Now we look at weeks 5 through 10, wide receiver 38 during that span. So a big, big drop off in his play, averaging only 9.5 fantasy points during that span as well. QB situation is different. Sam Darnold's on IR. Cam Newton looks to be the starter now, but his production just hasn't really been there. So factor cap at this point, DJ Moore needs to be benched in fantasy.
I think that's a fact. I think he's got to prove it to us. Like, he had our trust early when we were not confident in him, and now we're confident in him and he's terrible. But I mean, his ADOT drops by over 24% when McCaffrey's on the field. And so you're telling me if he's going short routes, you need Cam Newton to be a finesse passer? Like, when was the last time we saw that?
I cannot recall.
I worry about the floor. I don't think the ceiling's high enough to justify the floor at this point, so I'll bench him. He's more of a DFS play at this point for me. Like, there's going to be some hit weeks, and like, I don't doubt that Cam Newton will get him the ball eventually, but if you're asking me to figure out when those weeks are or play him every week and hope to catch one, I'm not doing it.
Yeah, and he makes you nervous just because of the last handful of weeks here. And the targets have been decent, but the yardage isn't there. The catches aren't there. And we saw this a little bit last year where it came down to, is DJ Moore going to pop off this week or is he going to burn you? And it kind of sucks to look at it just because he started so good and you know he's very talented. He's a former first round draft pick. He's had these big games through the season. So I guess at the end of the day, and you mentioned something like this earlier, it depends on what sort of league, what sort of team you have right now and what your wide receiver depth looks like. I know for me personally, looking at two home leagues, I have a really stacked wide receiver core that I could probably sit him if I had him. And then on the other league, I'm starting guys like Bateman, and I think I had to start Ayuk last week just because I don't have a ton of wide receivers at this point. So it might just be dependent on that. Do you think that with Cam there, do you think Robbie Anderson takes any sort of a jump at all? He did score last week. I will say that.
He did. I mean, a jump from what? I mean, from like wide receiver
it might be
74 exactly. Or whatever the hell he is right now. Like, it's not going to take much. I mean, one touchdown a month is going to put him over what he was. So, yes, to be technical, I'll say he takes a step forward and trends closer to DJ Moore. I would still prefer Moore to Anderson, but I starting a Cam Newton receiver right now is not optimal, I don't think.
Yeah, and he's only projected, just looking at ESPN, 9.6 fantasy points. He did had a decent week. He caught four passes, and this was the first time he caught four passes since week four. So he went a lot of weeks only catching somewhere between 0 to 3 passes. So I don't think it's something I want to bank on as well. Hoping the best for DJ. Maybe things will open up a little bit more now that McCaffrey's back, but only time will tell. The running back position, Jonathan Taylor, have to talk about this guy. Weeks 4 through 10, Jonathan Taylor has scored in every single game, 9 in those 7 weeks. The guy's on absolute fire. During that run, he scored 178.9 PPR points to second place. He's only scored 123.1. So he's on fire. We know Derrick Henry's out of the picture right now. For fantasy purposes, he's still ranked as what, like a top three running back, even though he's only played 8 games. Unreal. But factor cap, Jonathan Taylor will run away with the RB1 overall finish by a landslide.
I think it's a fact. I don't know who's catching him, and why would we project him to slow down at this point? I mean, he's catching over 82% of his passes, and he's running through everybody, and it's an offense that funnels through him. It's not like they have a ton of other options. Like, Michael Pittman's a good story, you know, but Mo Alie-Cox is going to catch a touchdown here and there. But what else are they doing if it's not the Jonathan Taylor show?
And you have to love the touches, because, you know, we saw last year we were a bit frustrated because he wasn't getting as many as you wanted at certain points of the year. And now last game, 27 touches. The game before that, 21. I mean, he's getting the ball, not just running. And we know Nyheim Hines has been a traditional pass catcher, but seeing games like last week, Jonathan Taylor, 6 catches. That's great. It didn't go for the yardage, but at the same time, for PPR leagues, that's everything you look to see.
Yeah, no, he's what we wanted Najee Harris to be. Like, he's going to get that workload, that feature role. He's just on a better offense. Like, it's not that Carson Wentz is a great improvement over Ben Roethlisberger, but it kind of is. It's a better offensive line, and it's just an offense. It's a team that's going to keep games close. Like, say what you will about Pittsburgh. I don't know on that. But Indianapolis is a good team. They're going to play a lot of close games. And even if they don't, he's not getting game scripted out of these things. So if you're telling me I get 25 touches a game from Jonathan Taylor, which is way up from where it was in the first month of the season, I can't imagine him losing ground, and he's just going to extend that lead for the RB1 title.
So do you think, I'm right there with you. I mean, I think Austin Eckler might be the closest guy right now, but you're kind of banking on a lot as well with him. But do any matchups make you worried about Jonathan Taylor, or do we think that he's at this point now that he's been so great that we shouldn't, I know we're not going to hesitate to play him, but we shouldn't be worried about matchups. I know next is the Buffalo Bills, and then we have the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but is he at this point just kind of matchup proof as far as our optimism for him?
Yeah, I mean, obviously nobody's going to call Tampa Bay a great matchup or anything, but at the very least, I look at it that he plays Josh Allen and Tom Brady the next 2 weeks. They're going to have to score points. And is there a way that maybe you've seen something I haven't, but if Indianapolis is going to score points, it's going through that man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's the point guard of their entire offense, is the running
back. LeBron James. He's their point guard, their forward, their center. He's just about everything.
A perfect comparison right there. So Luka Doncic as well. Same sort of thing. Shifting over to, again, the wide receiver position. This has been an interesting dilemma. I guess maybe it's just like a blank wide receiver room at this point, but curious to hear your thoughts here. So weeks 5 through 10, Jamal Agnew has outscored Marvin Jones Jr. and Laviska Shenault in 4 out of 5 of those games during that 5 to 10 span. During this span, again, weeks 5 through 10, Agnew is the wide receiver 31. Marvin Jones is the wide receiver 46. Shenault is the wide receiver 73. So it's this interesting room of wide receivers. We have this guy who used to play cornerback, I'm pretty sure, and like some Devin Hester, off brand Devin Hester here. But factor cap, Jamal Agnew is the best fantasy option for the Jaguars wide receivers rest of season moving forward.
You were talking earlier about just swings and misses. I have way too much Marvin Jones and even DJ Chark. Like, I just completely whiffed on this offense. So I'm not going to do it again. I will say that's a fact. He's the best receiver in this room. If I have to pick a pass catcher, I think Dan Arnold's the man, though.
He is. He is, especially looking at the amount of targets that guy has gotten. So if you're really looking for a guy to catch passes and you're looking for consistency, these three wide receivers are not bad. I mean, Agnew scored, I think, 13-ish points last week without catching a catch. Exactly. Unreal.
Yeah, I mean, Dan, like you said, this offense isn't one I'm banking on. I still think Trevor Lawrence will be okay for those in Dynasty looking long term. He just got thrown into a tough situation. Obviously, you lose your wide receiver one. It's an ugly situation in Jacksonville all the way around. But if I'm mining value, Dan Arnold, I mean, over since week five, he's on a 1,000-yard pace. Like, that is the direction I'd go, and he's still too cheap on these DFS sites. So I'm good with him there. But otherwise, I'm okay with, you know, leaving Jacksonville games on the little screen when you're watching the games on Sundays.
Yeah, Dan Arnold as well, 24 targets the last three games, and he scored 10 points or above those last three as well. With Marvin Jones, I'm with you because I feel like I went out and grabbed him in a lot of places because he seemed like a good value. He was. And then the beginning of the year, here's some of the fantasy weeks, 18.7, 17.5.
They were scoring as a team.
Unreal. So seeing that he did – seeing that he had some of those weeks this year with the same quarterback, does that give you any sort of like, okay, maybe I can throw him in there at some point?
If you're strapped and you've got a bye week or an injury situation, like, sure, but you're chasing a touchdown on 3 to 5 targets. Like, it's a shot, but Agnew's got the big play upside. If I have to pick one in a pinch, like in PPR, maybe it'll be Agnew. To be completely honest, I'd rather chase like a goal line back from a different team and try to get a touchdown that way than try to pin the tail on the Jag receiver.
I'm with you. I think what we're both getting at right here is that neither of the three options here are that sexy to plug in right now. I'm with you there. Hot topic here as we move on to the next factor cap. Patriots backfield. So 20 carries for 100 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. He had 4 catches as well. 27.4 fantasy points, which left Ramondre Stevenson as the RB2 for week 10 overall. The week prior, he had 12.6 fantasy points on 12 touches. So pretty efficient there. And then week 6, if we go back to there, he had 15.2 fantasy points on 8 touches. So he's had some efficiency. And then when he got the lead role, he was very, very good. If people roster him, they have this big head and this big high hopes right now. Some people who don't roster him might be trying to trade for him. So it's good to address him right now in the big factor cap question. This might be the most interesting one just because I've seen so much back and forth about this. But factor cap, Ramondre Stevenson will take over the Patriots running back starting job when Damian Harris is back.
I'm going to go cap. I need you to define takeover for me. Does this mean he's going to score the most fantasy points over the stretch? Does it mean he's going to get the most carries? How are you defining it?
I would say when people are thinking that he'll be the lead back is that he touches the football the most in the backfield.
I'm going to say it's pretty close. I'll say he does, but I'm going to say Damian Harris gets more of the valuable touches. So I think it'll be about a coin flip the rest of the way as far as total points go. Maybe Stevenson holds a slight edge in touches, but I think if you have two, you might have none in this backfield as far as guys you feel comfortable starting on a weekly basis.
That is the exact point I was going to get at, is that I don't think that one guy wins the job and becomes a 20-touch running back. I think that if Ramondre Stevenson comes out like he just did and he's efficient and he looks really good, Damian Harris had some nice games this year, 3 games this year with 100 rushing yards or more, 7 rushing touchdowns, so I think it's going to be exactly what you just said. It's going to be two guys both touching the ball. Now, before, when it was one guy getting most of the work and the other guy getting some work, it might just be a committee and they might just run with the hot hand, which is not always great for fantasy.
No, and we know Belichick's in no hurry to make our lives easier as fantasy managers.
No.
That's going to be a pain. Stevenson's going to catch more balls than Harris. Like, if you're in a PPR league, like I could see leaning that way where you can chase volume through the passing game more so than the hoping for a touchdown. But Stevenson's a good player. Harris is a good player. I'm not sure either has a significant talent edge. And you're looking at a Patriots team that's bottom 10 in pace. So, like, I'm not sure there's going to be enough plays to support two backs and Mac Jones, like this offense, they're winning games, but they're not exciting. I'm with you. I'd be more inclined to start neither than to start both.
Yeah, and I think you know, with Stevenson, the one of the good signs besides having an awesome week was the four catches. So if he continues to grow in that game, obviously no James White. I don't think he'll become James White or anything like that, but that might be for PPR leagues a good aspect. But he still should be rostered.
100%. If Harris still isn't 100% healthy, like if Harris is out, you fire him up as a top 15 play. Like, I think that much we know, and for that upside alone, he's worth rostering.
And still ESPN only rostered in 45.4% of leagues. So he probably might be out there. And we see with him, we see other running backs come in and they step in for the starter and they're just okay. We saw Alex Collins, for instance, he came in for Chris Carson. He was just okay. This guy was good, so he needs to be rostered. Next one on the list, another guy who came. We have a bunch of injuries, guys in, guys out. This guy returned. We just talked about Damian Harris missing time. This guy returned from missing time, and this is for the quarterback position. So he threw the ball 40 times. He only completed 20 passes. So in my math, that's a 50% completion rate.
I think it's by you, man.
Hey, I got my master's, man. They taught me a few things over there. Hey, there we go. 161 passing yards. My math doesn't say that's good. And the two interceptions, not good either. 5.64 fantasy points on the return for Russell Wilson. He has Arizona on the slate next game. Factor cap. We should be concerned about Russell Wilson's performance in week 10 moving forward now if we're looking to plug him in.
It's a tricky one. I'm going to say fact because you need to be concerned about this team falling out of the race. Like, they're 3-6. They got Arizona this week. If Kyler returns and they lose, they go to 3-7. What motivation do you have to play Russ?
Yeah.
I'm not saying they bench him or sit him or anything, but man, I mean, if they win this week, like, my answer completely changes, but I'm just not sure that they do. If they win, you can start moving forward. Maybe he gets healthy. Like, he was inefficient, like you said, in just about every regard last week. And the thing we know about Russell Wilson is that he's uber efficient. And we have, what, like a decade sample of that over four quarters of him not being. So long term, if Seattle stays competitive, Russell Wilson's as cheap as he's ever going to be right now. And so are the members of his passing game. Like, if you told me you wanted to buy low on Tyler Lockett, like, give me some of that. Like, it might not pan out, but you're paying, what, 50 cents on the dollar for him right now?
Yeah, not much at all. I saw plenty of people kind of hinting that now is the time for a guy like Lockett. Even might be some concerns about DK. I don't know. I personally don't, but I almost wonder, and I know someone who works close with you, Stefania Bell, I'm sure she's talked about it plenty. I don't know much about the medical side of it, but I almost wonder if he should not have come back this week. I wonder that.
She feared the early return, and she was spot on, as she normally is. She's very good at what she does.
Yep.
But that he didn't get re-injured. At the very least, like you said, he threw 40 passes, so he made it through the game fine. I think he's going to trend in the right direction. It's just a matter of it's fast enough for fantasy managers. I think it will be, as long as they can stay competitive. If they fall to 3-7, then I'm really shaken.
So for Arizona, would you, there's plenty of quarterbacks, let's say in a standard, your home league, your one quarterback league, there's plenty of guys that are probably still available that could be streamed this week. I mean, I can go through the list of guys, but would you be hesitant playing him if he was your number one guy for your fantasy team? Would you be hesitant because the matchup's tough against Arizona? Their defense is pretty solid and people have struggled before. Would you hesitate plugging him in this week?
I'd hesitate. I'm not sure that it would stop me from doing it, though. If Kyler plays, they're going to have to score to keep up. Yeah. I don't trust that running game. If you tell me I'm getting 40 passes from Russell Wilson, I'm telling you, you have a top 10 quarterback 98% of the time. And I think that's going to be the case again this week. So I'll take my chances with Lockett or DK making a play or two. He's not throwing 40 passes and not throwing any touchdowns. And it's not happening again. It's just not.
No, I wouldn't bank on him having a similar slate and looking at who he's throwing to. He's not throwing to the Patriots wide receiver core or something like that. So
we saw a little bit of the rushing upside too. Obviously it was a hand injury. So like, I'm not worried about his legs. If he throws the ball 40 times and has 30 rushing yards, Russell Wilson's a top 8 quarterback and you can book that almost every week.
talking about rushing upside. I'm trying to get these little transitions into.
Segways. Yeah, you're learning. You're good.
There we go. There we go. So for this this next player, week 6 through 8, Antonio Gibson scored under 10 fantasy points in all of those games. So week 6 through 8, under 10. He had the shin issue going on. I know that that might have been preventing him from having the upside in his play. They did hit the bye, and you know I talked about it on the podcast before, and several others did as well, that this next game for Gibson was going to be very telling if this bye week gave him the rest that he might have needed to kind of bounce back. And he played well against Tampa Bay. He wasn't super, super efficient on the ground with the yardage, but he did score twice. It's a tough defense for a running back to sure. to get the points for 21.4 fantasy points for this. So against Tampa Bay. So the question here for Antonio Gibson, fact or cap? Antonio Gibson is again to be trusted weekly for lineups.
I'm going to go cap here. I mean, listen, he scored the 2 touchdowns. He got the volume. He ran as many routes as McKissick. Like, all of that's encouraging. And if you wanted to tell me he's trending in the right direction, I'll listen. But he had 2 runs that gave him 27 yards last week. His other carries, he averaged less than 5 feet per carry. Not yards, yeah. 5 feet per carry.
Unreal.
My man's 6'2". So, like, he's not even averaging a full him. Like, that's a problem. And I don't think Washington, like, as good as that win was last week, I don't think it's a sign of things to come. So game flow, I don't think is exactly going to work in his favor. And everybody benched him last week. So you're going to be chasing those points this week and the next few. I think that's a mistake.
Carolina's not the easiest of defenses either.
They're playing better now.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's going to be a tough game coming up. And I mean, even after a big game, he's not really projected to be scoring 15, 16 points. He's just under 12 points. So again, roster dependent, but you know, I don't know if you can expect this performance. You said the 5 feet stat just in general, 2.7 yards per carry, just as a whole. I know he had those big yards as well. Mm-hmm. 2 for 14 as well, with the catches. So, we've seen a lot of bad out of him, and now the injury report came up that he was limited Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's not like he's back to 100% health. You know, that's another sign.
No, and I think all he did was answer the question of which Washington running back do you want? Like, coming into the week, it was kind of a coin flip. Like, maybe they get blown out, McKissick gets 6 to 8 targets, and that pays off. I think Gibson's definitively the running back in Washington you want. I just don't want him in my lineup right now unless I see it again.
All right, I got one more, Kyle, for you. And again, appreciate your time coming on the podcast today. Chicago Bears fan in the burbs of Illinois, so I have to ask something around the Bears. I'm not sure that that's the team you want to talk about necessarily, but I will throw this question out for you. So weeks 8 and 9, Justin Fields was the QB3 for fantasy. Really picked up his game as far as the fantasy world goes. Didn't result in any wins for us, unfortunately, but fantasy-wise, he has picked up his game. One of those games, he's rushed for over 100 yards, which is a good sign, too, because that's what we kind of expect out of Justin Fields, is that dual threat, Konami code sort of quarterback here. 3 touchdowns in those 2 games as well, total touchdowns. So factor cap, Justin Fields should be a fantasy starter in 1 quarterback leagues.
I'm going to go cap there barely, but I think the better question is, if you're teeing that up with a Chicago-based feeling, how are we not talking about the 10-4 Bulls?
I'm all about that, because we got a guy that's in the MVP race right now. That's what I heard.
DeMar DeRozan's balling out, and you're talking to a Raptors fan. Like, that dude brought me a championship. Like, he is doing things for you guys. You guys are impressive there. And if I were you, I'd rather talk about the Bulls and the Bears right now. I don't think Fields is necessarily locked in, and that's really not an indictment on him. I just think there's 10 good guys ahead of him. He's in the Kirk Cousins, Ryan Tannehill bucket for me.
Yeah,
which I think is fine. And if you're pressed in a 14-team league or even 12 and you need to throw him in there, I'm fine with it. I'm just not looking at my lineup and be like, yeah, I got quarterback figured out. I got big bad Justin Fields on my roster.
I think with Baltimore this week, if he again has a 3rd game in a row now that he looks real good, I think he's a good stream the following week versus Detroit. So I wouldn't say get him in your lineup right now. Do you want to put him on your bench if you have the ability to do so? Sure, but I would say see what he does against Baltimore, and if it's good again, then versus Detroit the next week, I think you might have a streamer depending on, you know, who you usually start. If it's Josh Allen or Dak Prescott, maybe not, but at the same time, there's been plenty of guys that have kind of juggled between that streamer kind of weekly output there.
And you don't know how Kyler's going to look health-wise, Russ. Like, there's some moving pieces as far as the quarterback position goes with health. And if you want to stream him at Detroit next week, like what you're saying, like, if you're not a big family person, that's Thanksgiving. Like, you can separate yourself a little bit. So I got a fantasy squad to take care of here in this first Thanksgiving game. Justin Fields, you're very well. He could earn a turkey leg that day. He's a good player. If he keeps rushing like what he's done lately, I think you're on to something here. It's going to be hit and miss. I don't think he's as consistent as like the Jalen Hurts guys ahead of him. I would still prefer those guys. But if he can start looking at Allen Robinson a little bit more, keeps a connection with Darnell Mooney, Montgomery back opens up the offense a little bit. I think he's trending in the right direction and he's interesting. I'm just not 100% sure that he's a lock-in, set it and forget it type.
And on a quick side note, keep listening to the podcast. Keep your eye maybe a little bit deeper of a league, but keep your eye on Cole Kmet because they look good together last game. Yeah. Kmet actually stretched the field a lot more than he usually does because he's not a high yardage guy, typically for the Bears at least, but they looked really good together. He had a 14.7, I think, off the top of my head, fantasy points. So another guy to keep your eye on. And sure. Kyle, you mentioned just on another side note, you mentioned basketball. Are you a big fantasy basketball guy by chance, or do you just watch?
Oh, come on. You do it all. Of course, you play a little bit, you play a lot. Basketball was the one sport I could play growing up, so that's kind of where my heart is coming into all this. Obviously, football is kind of the monster that rules everything, but oh yeah, fantasy basketball is definitely a big part of the rotation.
Same here. We got two home leagues, and one's a dynasty, one's a redraft, but I've been doing that for the last like 4 years, and I love it. You got to pay attention a lot more than football, though. That's for sure, because every day you're setting your lineups.
It's a grind, but at the same time, you have new information every day. Like, I like making basketball calls because I get immediate feedback. For this week, like, I'm big on Cole Beasley. Like, I got to wait all freaking week to see if I'm right or wrong on that. And then I lament or celebrate for a week. Like, if I don't like DeMar DeRozan tonight, I'm going to be right or wrong, and I'm going to be back on the horse to make a call tomorrow. Like, it's the just
next night. Yeah.
I like how that rolls, and I it's a long season, and I get the grind of it. And if you're a football only player, like basketball and baseball, sports like that are going to be a tough sell. But I started with those sports, so I it's a labor of love.
All right, the last question I have for you, and then I'm going to cut you loose because I know, again, you're a very busy guy, and I think I told Kyle before the show started I got to help set up Christmas decorations too early, not by my own choice, though. Way too early. I'm with
you. Snow on the ground yet?
No, but don't jinx it because it'll go from 90 to like 30 in a matter of a day in Illinois. So last question, and this has nothing to do with a factor or a cap. I thought it was interesting because I pulled this on Twitter, and it got – I don't know, almost close to 500 votes, and it was very, very close. So I'm curious to hear what you think about it. And it was a random question that came up in a home league here that I put out on Twitter, and I had people debating, which, you know, I stay out of, and I just kind of sit there with the popcorn and watch them. But Dynasty, 10-team Dynasty League. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to valuation, I guess, here. Who would you rather have on your team knowing nothing else about the rest of your team? Okay. Would you rather have DK Metcalf or Nick Chubb? What's your thoughts there?
Give me
putting you on the spot.
Yeah, no, give me DK Metcalf. You can't teach what he has as far as size goes. We've seen quarterbacks last forever right now. So if you told me I'm getting another 5 years of Russell Wilson, to me that means another 5 years of DK Metcalf at top 10 levels. Nick Chubb kind of relies on touchdowns these days. I'm not sure what direction that offense is kind of headed in. It's run heavy, which I'd like, but the passing game involvement isn't there quite as much as I'd want it to be. You still have Kareem Hunt. D'Ernest Johnson looked great. I'm not sure they have the quarterback situation figured out. So I guess it'd be more of a bet on Seattle than Cleveland of anything. But if I had to pick a side, like, it's close, and I get it. In Dynasty, I generally want to build around receivers, so that's part of it too. Give me DK Metcalf. Where did the poll end? Who won that one?
The poll, I took a screenshot here. It was actually really close. I don't think the poll actually finished just yet, but
let me retweet it then.
Yeah, there you go. Let's bring it up. All right, yeah. Nick Chubb 53, DK 47. So very close. Yeah, very, very close. 436 votes on the dot. That's when I screenshotted it. It said 6 hours left at this point. That was right before I think the podcast. So you can go either way. And I guess it kind of depends on how you build your dynasty teams. Like you just said, you like to go wide receiver heavy and get a core there. I know in the past, personally, I've been kind of weak at wide receivers because I do the opposite. But shelf life of a running back versus the shelf life of a wide receiver in dynasty, two different things. But also the depth of the position are two different things as well. So that's interesting. We'll have
what side did you fall on it?
I am very torn on it. And that's kind of the reason I pulled it, because I feel like DK, like you said, will be tied to a good quarterback and he's going to be very involved in the offense and he's guaranteed probably volume for the rest of his career. And I think for maybe, I don't know, 7-8 years, you're going to see DK Metcalf be very relevant, maybe around the 6 mark. But Nick Chubb, I think the running back position is so thin that it's hard to trade for running backs at times in dynasty, so that the value kind of goes up. And I know that, you know, the shelf life, again, he's not going to play another 10 years, but again, it's not a deep position. So that's why I'm kind of torn on it right now. And it's been an active debate in a home league. And it wasn't like a big fighting point or anything like that, but it was just different perspectives, I guess, for dynasty.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I think it's close. I just retweeted it, so hopefully we can get some support from Metcalf and push him over the top. You got 3 hours left, so
there you go. Three hours.
I figured you were looking. Push him over the top.
There we go. So if you're listening live on anywhere right now, looks like we still got some viewers on Twitter, at least. It's interesting because on the StreamYard, there's a disconnect between StreamYard and Twitter, so you cannot see the comments from Twitter or the actual viewers, which they're fixing. But if you are listening right now, go vote on that poll. That's a good one. Kyle, again, man, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I know you're very busy. Big fan of your piece of the big puzzle for what you do at ESPN, especially with the Fantasy Focus Live there. Can you remind everybody, again, where to find you? And then if you have anything you want to plug before we close the show out here.
Yeah, man, I appreciate the invite, the opportunity to talk ball. Like, it's just – you get a fantasy baseball, basketball podcast rolling, like, you know where I'm at.
All right, I'll hit you up.
Yeah, please do. I'm Kyle Soppy, ESPN on Twitter. No check mark, no fancy stuff. It's just Kyle Soppy, ESPN. Come follow me. I'll share what is left over at the end of the week from research packets and all that good stuff. We'll try to get you some wins.
Absolutely. And if you are listening live, you can catch me on Sunday. I'll be on the Fantasy Points Extra Points show doing some player prop stuff. So catch me at that time. Otherwise, good luck with your fantasy matchup this week, and have a good rest of your week, guys.